Hello there, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Stay informed, stay inspired, and stay ahead with DVM360, the leading multimedia provider of veterinary news. From breaking industry updates to expert insights and conference coverage from leading industry conferences such as Every Fetch Conference, WVC, and VMX, DVM360 keeps you up to date with the latest and greatest in the veterinary medicine industry. Visit DVM360.com and be a part of a community that's shaping the future of veterinary medicine.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Don't sound the alarm when an exotic is coming down. We got you covered. We got you covered. And a wonderful colleague and friend of ours that's going to chat with us more, and an incredible textbook that she authored as well, is Madonna Livingstone in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I know this is a work in progress for us to make this happen, this podcast recording, and it's, you know, my end. So I'm so glad that we can connect and chat. And where are you located, by the way, right now?
I'm located in my clinic, which is in North Lanarkshire in Scotland.
So she's in Scotland, everybody. So that's where this, and you sent me this book all the way from over there, and it's absolutely fantastic. So we're going to chat about it, but we're going to chat about four things, you know, to to basically calm your nerves a little bit if an exotics is coming down, or four tips in dealing with exotics in general, which is always nice. So known as the practice geek, Madonna qualified from Glasgow Vet School in 2002 and is head vet and head of exotics at the ARC Veterinary Clinics in Coatbridge, Scotland, with 80% exotics caseload. Madonna delivers all the clinical exotic lectures for Glasgow Vet School, and she's the clinical lead for the final year selective exotics rotation for Glasgow Vet School, and delivers the husbandry and nutrition lectures for exotics to the veterinary bioscience courses, and is the affiliate veterinary surgeon of Glasgow Vet School. So that's fantastic. How do you like teaching?
Love it. I've been doing it for about 8 years now. I really enjoy enthusing the next generation of vets about exotics and increasing their confidence. I find it really rewarding.
Yeah, it's incredible. And wait, there's more to the listeners. Madonna speaks widely on exotic animal medicine and surgery to vets at veterinary nurses via conferences and webinars, and delivers in-house CPD or CE for practices. So she's spoken at the Scottish Parrot Society, Beloved Rabbit Charity events, and the International Herpetological Society to owners and enthusiasts. So you also speak to the pet owner side of things, which is awesome. How's that?
Yeah, I really enjoy it, because I think education, every day is a school day. So educating and getting together with like-minded people who want to work together to promote the best welfare in the best way that we know how currently. So yeah. No, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing that too, because I know when pet owners say, oh, I want to get a cockatiel, or I want to get a pufferfish, it's like, maybe they don't do the homework necessarily. So it's nice for you to educate them, know before you go and have one of these. So that's awesome. And when she's not working, Madonna can be found spending time with her husband, her three dogs, 20 chickens, 8 ferrets, 4 cockatiels, and 2 dwarf pufferfish. And my question to you is, do they all get along?
Well, the ferrets would eat my birds, right. But the dogs get on really well with the ferrets. They play with the ferrets, and I never leave the dogs alone with the parrots, with the cockatiels. So
yeah,
I have to separate some of the species.
And is there a particular species that you're more in love with, just because? What is it?
Oh, that's a hard one, because it can sometimes depend on my mood. It can depend on what patients I've had in recently. I would say that I've been keeping pet ferrets for 25 years, so I am ferret daft. I have a ferret tattoo on my forearm. Oh, yeah, it's not my...
Yes. Yeah. That's adorable.
It's not coming out very well there. Yeah. So yeah, I do love it. They giggle when they're happy. How can you not like a species that giggles when it's happy? Yeah. But I love them all. I do love them all.
Yes, I love that. And okay, so let's chat a little bit about, when dealing with exotics. What would be like four tips for you to kind of give the listeners for when an exotic pet is coming down to see us?
So I would say that the first one is don't hit your panic button. Absolutely don't hit your panic button. That happens. I see it with veterinary professionals all the time. They, instead of realizing that they are a veterinary professional and they've got the skills, they probably know more than they think they know. They just go into a complete tailspin and think, oh, what the hell do I know about this species, or what the heck do I know about this species? And if you don't hit your panic button, if you take a second to go back to basics and think logically, because history taking is not species specific. We ask our dog and cat owners, where do you keep your dog? How much exercise do you give it? What do you feed it? What's its poo and pee like? What's concerning you? What preventative health care do you practice? And that's exactly what we would ask for these exotic species. Yes, from a husbandry point of view, we're going to have to ask a lot more in-depth questions, but that's where your questionnaires come in really handy, that your reception team or front of house team can get people to fill out to give you that peace of mind that you've not forgotten to ask any of the questions. And then if you realize that a clinical exam for the vast majority of species is exactly the same, because all a clinical exam is an assessment of body systems. So if you don't hit your panic button, if you recognize that you're just assessing a body system, it's the same clinical exam that you're used to doing in your more familiar species, and you do your same clinical exam in the same order each time, that's when you're going to start to find things are wrong. Okay. And if you owners don't expect you to be a walking encyclopedia. What they expect you to do is care. So once you've found that there's something wrong on your clinical exam, you might not necessarily know what to do about it, but that's when you go to your trusted resources. That's when you pick up the phone and ask a colleague for help, or you go to one of the trusted websites, like Lefebvre website. Lefebvre Vet is really good, and it's a free of charge resource for getting quick information, or you have your textbooks that you can refer to. So it's about not always having the knowledge on the top of your head, but knowing where you can go to get it. And what I think can happen is because vets panic and they just think, oh, I don't know how to treat that animal, exotic owners get turned away, or they don't get a full clinical exam. And what's inadvertently happening sometimes is that owners are being left with the impression their pet doesn't matter.
Right.
And that's not the case. It's just vets are scared.
And it kind of leaves a bad taste in the pet owner's mouth, the fact that, oh, they don't even want to even try, to do something. And I remember too, I'm not well versed in ferrets, but I remember I did see one that came in and I said, I don't know that answer, but if you just give me a few minutes, I can make a phone call to one of my friends. And she was so nice about it. She's like, oh, absolutely, take your time. I think just showing that transparency and maybe vulnerability too, that you may not have the answers, but we're going to get there.
Yeah, 100%. You were willing to step outside your comfort zone, see the animal, try to help, and check your resources to do the best job possible. Nobody knows everything about anything. Nobody. Empty the claims they do are lying or delusional, in my opinion. Okay? Because nobody knows everything about anything. And the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
I sometimes feel like pet owners think that we as veterinarians, we're like the Noah's Ark. We're supposed to know every species from elephants to tigers and rabbits and dogs, and it's not the case,
Yeah, no, exactly. There's 10,000 different species of reptile alone.
Oh my
Do you know,
gosh.
right? Alone. There's 364 different species of parrot. Okay.
What?
Yes. Do you think I know all of those species? Hell no. Okay. Absolutely not. But do you know what? A skeleton is a skeleton is a skeleton. It doesn't, the all species has There's two requirements to develop osteoarthritis, because all osteoarthritis is wear and tear, yes?
Yeah.
So the only two requirements to develop osteoarthritis is you have a skeleton and you live long enough to develop wear and tear. So anything with a skeleton can get osteoarthritis. The problem is with most of our exotics, they're prey species, so they do not show pain in an innately human way. So you need to not hit your panic button, but you do your skeletal pain examination exactly the same way. Exactly the same way as you would with a dog or cat.
Right.
So it's that from with the birds, when I'm doing the wings, I'm gently pulling the wings laterally, one at a time, slowly, to see if the bird resents or one limb being moved more than the other. If it's a rabbit, I'm extending the four limbs cranially and caudally, and seeing if I'm having to put more pressure on one limb compared to the contralateral limb. Well, we do that in our dogs and cats. Yeah. And of course, if you're having to put more pressure on one limb, chances are that's because the animal's guarding it because it's painful. But we forget, because vets hit their panic button and they forget to do a full skeletal pain examination. And one of the most common things that I will see in a lot of the small mammals is osteoarthritis.
Yeah. And I also think that we get a little nervous because of handling and husbandry in the sense that we don't know how to necessarily restrain properly for the physical exam if it's a bird versus a reptile. What are your thoughts on that to those that may be interested and they're just like, oh, I just don't know. They're almost like fine china. I don't want to break them.
So I would say that they're less breakable than you think they are. Okay. So with all the prey species, I always have a towel on the table, because one of the innate requirements if you're a prey species is to escape predation at a split second's notice. Yeah. Well, they can't do that on a slippy surface. So if you're putting them on a slippy surface, you're actually, without meaning to, jeopardizing their welfare because they feel unsafe. If they feel unsafe, that's when they're more likely to kick. That's when they're more likely to struggle and injure themselves. If it's a bird and it's a friendly bird, I tend to do a lot of the clinical exam sat down and the bird sat on my knee. And I will work with the bird that way, providing it's a friendly bird. With birds, what you've got to remember is that they don't have a diaphragm and they breathe by lifting their keel bone up and down. So the only difference when you're examining a bird really is you've got to ensure that you're not m stopping that keel bone from moving, the breastbone from moving up and down, or because you can suffocate it.
Yeah, great points. I'm curious too, Madonna, where did you get your inspiration to go into exotics vet med?
So I, growing up, had the usual small furries. I had rabbits. I bred canaries, finches, and budgies from the age of 7 and showed them with my stepfather. And when I started seeing practice at the age of 12, and then I get hired to be the Saturday girl when I was 13, because I'm 45 now, so I'm old, right? But the laws were different back then. The vets I worked with cared, but they just didn't know much about the exotic species. And even as a child, I recognized that the human-animal bond wasn't species specific. And I didn't think it was fair that my exotics didn't get the same high level of care as the dogs and cats. And that didn't sit well with me. I have a massive justice trigger. So I thought, right, well, when I get into vet school, I'm changing that. So that was my drive, because I saw what I went through with my animals and I didn't want other owners to have to go through that. And the vets I worked with were amazing and they really, really cared, but they just didn't have the knowledge.
And what was your journey like then? Did you have mentorship along the way into vet med and exotics? Like what did that look like?
So the mentorship, yes, the practice that I worked at from the age of 13 to the age of 21, was owned by two vets, Colin Bruce and Vivian Davidson, and they were amazing. Vivian in particular took me under her wing. She did have quite a lot of knowledge for some species, some of the exotic species, and she really, really encouraged me. And then when I got into vet, in fact, she wrote my recommendation, my letter of recommendation to get into Glasgow Vet School. But when I went to vet school, there was virtually nothing on exotics. I think I got 2 hours in 5 years.
Wow, yeah.
And when I first qualified from Glasgow Vet School, there was no certificate. There was no pathway for specialisation. So I'm self-taught. I got all the species-specific textbooks. I sat in on a Friday night quite happily reading my Douglas Mader medicine, surgery, reptile textbook, and did as much extra courses, extra studying that I could do. Once I'd been qualified a few years, a certificate became available, but it was in England. And I am a whole body. I'd by that point developed clients, a client base, because the clients would come to me and I would say, look, I've maybe never seen this species before, this condition. You've got two options. I can try to refer you somewhere, or I can do research into it. And where I worked wasn't initially a particularly affluent area. So for a lot of owners, referral was out with the realms of their reach financially. So they would say to me, Madonna, could you try? So I did. And then I built up the reputation doing that way. But I didn't want to move to England. I was settled, I'm a homebody, I had my support network. I asked if I could sit the exams. They told me no, because they went, oh, understandably, they wanted the money from the tuition. I get it. And then by the time a certificate became available in Scotland, I was already lecturing. So,
Do you
yeah.
think that in your years of experience, has the interest of exotics for the vet students, has it gone up, stayed the same, decreased? Like, what does that look like in your area?
It's definitely gone up. Definitely gone up.
I think so too, on here too. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I think the recognition that the human-animal bond isn't species specific has a big part of it. Yeah, it's something that is one of my apparently I have there's Madonnaisms. My students recently told me this, that there's Madonnaisms, and that's one of my Madonnaisms is because I say it all the time, the human-animal bond is not species specific.
You know what? I think we're going to make that the title of this podcast because I think it's brilliant. I really do. I love it. And it's so true. And I remember taking care of a gentleman's hamster that meant the world to him, meant the world to him. And the love that he had for this hamster was just unparalleled. I have never seen anything like it. And it made me want to help and do and care. And the thank yous. And I'm sure you get this too, because, right?
Yes.
The gratitude that they have is just unbelievable. So it's just beautiful that you say that.
Yeah, massively so. I've got so I'm quite open about mental health issues. I'm a depressive. I have been for years, and that's okay. It's under control. I have a support network. All's good. But one of the reasons I'm open about it is to normalize it so that my students feel comfortable, but also my clients. So a lot of my clients will talk to me. So I had, for example, an owner with a guinea pig, an adult female who has complex PTSD. And she told me that the only reason she was still alive was her pet guinea pig. That was the reason she was still alive. Now, I want to give you a scenario, Adam. How do you think she will feel if she comes up against the vet that says to her, why are you even trying? You can just buy another one for, 10 bucks or whatever it costs. I think they're about £16 in the UK. Because unfortunately, I still come across that. In 2025, I still come across vets that say things like that. And I think it's because they don't understand the human-animal bond. But inadvertently, they're also telling owners that they're disposable if they're saying things like that, you're saying to them, your pet is disposable. It's not worth treating it. And that's not fair. That's not right. Look, I bet that gentleman would have been devastated if he met one of those vets rather than being lucky enough to meet yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was so thrilled. And I want to talk to you about your book and to the listeners as I turn to the forward. I just want to share this quote, and I'll try to do it without crying. I don't know. It really hit me, Madonna. I mean, we're very similar with our love for the human animal bond. And she says, for the animals who are my companions, friends, and teachers, I dedicate this book to all the species because they all matter. Tell me how important that meant to put that in the foreword of your book.
It was my world. Animals are my world. I told people when I was 4 I was going to be a vet. I probably didn't know what a vet was, other than they made animals better, and
Right.
that was good enough for me. So yeah, I've learned so much from animals. I've learned so much from owners over the years as well, because I think we should be a team.
Yes, we should be a team. Okay, let's talk about this book because I'm just looking at the end to the almost 400 pages in this next book. I wrote one book chapter. It took me about 2 years to do. Our friend here, listeners, she has this wonderful book, Exotics Made Easy: Demystifying Rabbits and Small Mammals by Madonna Livingstone. It's a hardcover textbook. It's absolutely fabulous. And I'm going through it, and I want you to kind of walk us through a little bit. But the chapters that she has all creatures great and small, from rabbits to guinea pigs, rats, hamsters, Mongolian gerbils, chinchillas, the Degu. Am I saying that even right? I don't even know anymore.
Yes, perfect.
She's got the hedgehog and ferrets. Tell me about this book.
Well, yeah, I was lucky enough that 5M Publishing asked me, they approached me a few years ago now to and asked me if I would write a book. And initially it was one on rabbits. And after I said to them, "Have you got the right person?" and they assured me that they did. And then I realized that I am the only vet in the entire of the UK called Madonna. Okay. So
Yes.
I get away with nothing.
Okay.
I initially said, "Yes, I'd happily write for you," but I wasn't keen on doing a rabbit-only textbook because I felt this match the market was saturated for rabbit-only textbooks. I said I would like to write the textbook that I wished had been available when I was a new graduate. And so they asked me to say more. So I did. And they got very excited about it. So the All Creatures Great and Small, the first chapters is my approach to exotics. And I break down with examples why if you approach these species with the place of familiarity, they're all similar. They're just budding systems in a different wrapper. Then it makes it less scary, and it makes your investigations and your treatment options a lot more intuitive.
Yeah, it really does. And your images are spectacular.
Thank
Spectacular. Your graphs, your chart here. You have this one chart that I was like, oh, this is gold right here. She's got a chart to listeners on rabbit analgesic, and the dose. And I could ma picture this. Like, I would p take a picture, laminate this, and put this in the surgery room or even the treatment area because it's perfect. You have everything in here, from meloxicam, bupivacaine. It's brilliant. How long did this take for you to do?
2 years. I wrote 2 years of writing
Wow.
and 1 year of pre-publication editing.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And how has it been received?
I've been so happy because
Yeah.
I was a bit nervous about it coming out. In fact, I was exceptionally nervous about it coming out. But it's been getting really, really good reviews, which I'm over the moon with. Because it's practical, it's down to earth, it's easy. Well, I've been told it's easy to read because
Yes,
I'm
it
quite a
is.
chatty author, and I write for peer reviewed journals. When I first started writing for peer reviewed journals, I would get a row for my writing style being too chatty. I had to tone it down and make it more
Yeah.
scientific. But seeing vets are nervous, we don't want to have to translate things. Yeah, if it's
No.
you just want to what is it? How do I diagnose it? What treatment options can I give? What's the prognosis? You don't really want to go into all the pathophysiology because if you do, you're a geek like me. You can pick up
Yeah.
the book and
Yeah. This is fantastic. And, I'm just going through it. Just she's got nebulization doses here for chinchillas because, of course, they have those issues, of course, from acetylcysteine to saline, amikacin, doxycycline, Enro. I mean, it's just fantastic. I'm in awe looking, and your radiograph pictures are incredible.
I've got a lovely radiograph machine, lovely. And
Oh.
because I lecture around photos to keep students engaged and veterinary professionals engaged, I have like 25,000 pictures. So the problem was trying to narrow it down.
I was going to say that, like, to get out of your head into the context, like in the textbook, of all these images that you've had over the years that you've collected, and your storytelling is exceptional. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, this book is a 10 out of 10 to the listeners. I mean, and exactly to
Thank
your
you.
point, you're just telling us this is what you need to know. And it gives you the soup to nuts of what you do and the images, because I'm a visual person. And so you
Me
have
too.
it from the rabbit neuter and the spay here. Oh my gosh, this is fantastic. I feel like I can do all of this now.
Good, and so you should. There's no reason why you can't.
I
And I
know.
think as well, it was important to me to start off with how these animals should be looked after. Where did they evolve to live in? So that we can to help with the husbandry, because it's all very well and good fixing them, but if we send them back to the environment that broke them in the first place, then we're only doing half the job. So that's why it was important for me to cover husbandry recommendations using evidence base.
Yeah, evidence base is right. Love it. And I want to give you one final shout out on this book, because I'm not done. I'm obsessed with it. This is really good. Listeners, listen to me. Do not reinvent the wheel. Madonna already has a whole appendix dedicated to history forms for you all. So, when you think, oh, I don't know what to say for my rabbit history intakes, or dealing with the guinea pigs and asking these questions, that's okay. She's got you covered. They're all in here, and they're great questions that you're asking them too. So ferret history here, and I'm just again pulling through a couple of them. It's fantastic. So thank you for putting that in there.
No, you're more than welcome. Again, it was really important to me to make life as easy as possible for veterinary professionals. Life's stressful enough, and there's actually videos that go along with the book. I
Of
always
course there
forget
are.
about the I forget. Oh yeah, of course. I forget about the videos, but there's a code that you scan and it gives you access to the videos to show how to do some things, which
Yes.
I always forget that there are videos in there.
Yes, that's right. And where can we get access to this book?
Everywhere, all the online retailers, so Amazon, 5M Publishing, Barnes and Noble, anywhere that you would buy a book, you can buy that.
And we'll put this in the show notes as well, to the listeners here. But it's Exotics Made Easy: Demystifying Rabbits and Small Mammals by Dr. Madonna Livingstone. Thank you for being in this profession.
Oh, thank you for being in this profession as well. I think more people that actually l love the job.
Yes.
It's a stressful job, but you know what? It's so worth it. And you are
Right.
right, exotic owners are so grateful. Because
So, so
so
grateful.
grateful.
They really are. I gotta tell you a funny story, and we'll stop here. But when my editorial team reached out with the email from you, we said, we Dr. Madonna Liv. I said, just stop right there. Yes, her name is Madonna. Yes. Obsessed already, and I'm so glad I have a new friend. And to the listeners, you all have a new friend with her. She is a beacon of light, a great resource, and just a wonderful friend. And we're so honored to have her in this wonderful profession. And thank you for being on the podcast and all the great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me and speaking with me. It's meant a
Absolutely.
lot. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. Thank you, Adam.
Oh, and listen, Madonna, if you ever come to the States, you're coming to see me. Okay. We're gonna make
Definitely, you will regret that, you know.
Yeah. We're gonna
I will
hang.
hold you to it.
Absolutely. Would love to have you. So thank you so much for being here again. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Always so good. Don't forget to get a copy of this book. It's fantastic. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.